Luther had done nothing yet decisive to break with the Catholic Church. And indeed, quite a number of humanists in Germany and outside greeted Luther's theses warmly. When church authorities initially tried to discipline Luther, they did so through his religious order. He was an Augustinian. They turned to the Augustinians. They said, you know, Reverend Fathers, you've got a loose cannon over here. Let's strap him down. You see? So there was no great show of attacking Luther in any serious way. Well, things went on in this vein for a couple of years. And then in an academic disputation, an academic debate, a formal public debate, in the year 1519, Luther was drawn to an interesting and important position. He's debating, again, the question of indulgences and much else besides. And it is pointed out to him that councils have upheld indulgences. Luther was then drawn to deny the authority of church councils. And then Luther was told, well, after all, popes have endorsed indulgences. And Luther was drawn to deny the authority of popes. Now, in principle, he was denying councils and popes only on this specific issue. Indulgences. But by implication, he was denying conciliar and papal authority much more generally. So from about 1519, perhaps the full implications of Luther's objections to indulgences were beginning to come home to him, and he was on a path of separation from Rome. Now in 1520, Luther published three great treatises. I think this also indicates to us that by 1520, it had become very clear to him that there was no going back. Now, these are reasonably lengthy and reasonably complex treatises, but we can perhaps capture just something of the essence of each one. In his address to the German nobility, Luther called upon noblemen to reform the church in their territories, to abolish payments to Rome, to ban clerical celibacy, to end masses for the dead, to put an end to pilgrimages, to put an end to religious orders. In other words, a lot of those formal, structured, cultural phenomena of the medieval church that had existed and had been so much taken for granted for 1,000 years, Luther regarded as works, as things that people did as if they were efficacious, as if they were beneficial. Luther wants these things done away with, but he wants the nobility to undertake this reform, partly because he realizes that, at least at that time, he could not have gotten the clergy in most places to do this. The second of his treatises is on the Babylonian captivity of the church. Well, he argued here a whole series of theses about what a bad thing it is that there is a papacy, that authority is assigned to a papacy, that the papacy insulates itself from the wider church, that it doesn't listen to people. Some of those criticisms have a strikingly modern ring to them. But he also says that the captivity of the church consisted of the denial of communion, for example, to ordinary people in both kinds, bread and wine. This is common in Catholic Church today, but it was heretical in the 16th century. He disliked the idea that the church imposed the doctrine of transubstantiation. Transubstantiation was a fancy Greek-ish term applied to the explanation of how bread and wine become the body and blood of Christ in the Eucharist of the Catholic Church. Now, Luther continues to believe that the bread and wine received by communicants is the body and blood of Christ. What he takes away is the consecrating role of the priest, because he will not assign such great significance to a priest whom he regards as a simple minister. Luther indeed says in the end that only baptism and the Eucharist were valid sacraments. He gets rid of the other sacraments of the medieval church. Finally, his third treatise, On the Freedom of a Christian Man, argued that salvation depended on faith and grace, and that the ordinary person was therefore completely free of any need to do good works. One needn't bother oneself. One needn't worry oneself over the question of good works. In June of 1520, Rome condemned 41 of Luther's theses. Now, very important here,